ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः नामश्रेष्ठं मन्दमपि शचिपुत्रमत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमरुपरिं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशम् प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितः कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतम् जनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्विताश्च हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ओपन द डोर आई डिडन्ट कम या I'd mentioned the other day about Subhadra being the daughter of Rohini, but then I remembered that I'd read this on a website which is getting into the identity of Subhadra by Gauriyamart Sanyasi, so I took that as authoritative. But then I remembered that I looked this up previously in the Bhagavatam, and she's actually the daughter of Devaki. By Vasudev. So they may say something different in other Puranas. But as far as the Pramanam Amalam, are they? The Puranam Amalam, topmost of the spotless evidence, the spotless Purana is concerned. Devaki is the mother. So sorry if there's any confusion there. Name 572 of Vishnu Sahasranam is Sudhanva. Su means very nice, very good. And Dhanva means bow. So who has a very good bow? Dhanva, Sudhanva. Now naturally, if we think which form of the Lord has a very good bow, we think of Ramachandra Bhagavan. But surprisingly, in the comments, the commentators, none of them mention Rama. Very surprising. It's not that they're against Ram, they mention him so many times in this commentary. Of course, Lord Vishnu has his bow, Sharanga, by which he's known as Shangadha. I don't know if it's there in the Krishna book now, but it used to be that there was a little drawing in black and white at the beginning of every chapter in Krishna book. Still there?
No, it was there in the silver book.
Yeah, of the Krishna outside Vrindavan, standing with a bow. I can't remember what it was when he was in Vrindavan. So he has a very nice bow. Of course he has a nice bow. He doesn't have a useless, broken down toy bow and arrow for children to play with. He has a bow which is going to be the best. It's going to be for Krishna, it's going to be the best. Just like Srila Prabhupada, once he was received in Australia, had arrived in Australia at an airport, A Rolls-Royce car was brought for him. The best car. Best means it's way, way, way better than any other. It has that reputation. So some reporters, they wanted to get on Srila Prabhupada's case. You're supposed to be a holy man, renounced. So how come you're going in a Rolls-Royce car? And Srila Prabhupada said, well, I'm the representative of God, so I should be treated as good as God. What is this tin can car? God goes in a golden chariot. It's not even good enough. Srila Prabhupada turned the argument on them. So he has the best of bows. Of course, we would expect Lord Shiva also to have a good bow, but then Ram broke his bow. He was still just a young man. He hadn't had much experience in fighting, just had his first skirmish with Tartaka and Maricha. So he has a very good bow. Coming up in the next name is Khanda Parusha, Parashu. Parashu gives us the idea of Parashuram, another Rama. And these few names here in the beginning of this verse, Sri Baladev Vidya Bhushan interprets them all to mean Parashuram. So he says Sudhandva means Parashuram. Parashuram is famous for his Parashu, his axe. But Baladev says he also has a very good bow, which is understandable. It's not that he has only one weapon. In fact, as I remember in the fight with Bhishma, it was mostly a bow and arrows fight when Parashuram was fighting with Bhishma, guru fighting with disciple. It's nothing new. It's not good, but it's not new. Well, Bhishma justified it, that Guru apyavaliptasya karya karya majanata utpanna pratipannasya parityago vidhiyate. Bhishma said that even if one is a guru, then if he's not properly situated, he doesn't know how to instruct properly, or is fallen in sense gratification, he should be completely rejected. Anyway, that's not the subject of this verse. The acharyas, they quote one fight between the devas and the asuras. Many are recorded in Shastra. We can imagine it would be quite a fight, huh? Devas and the asuras, they're much more powerful, skillful, knowledgeable in use of weapons. They're altogether superior beings to humans. So if we see the history of the world, at least from the Western point of view, that it's mostly one battle after another, one fight after another. And some of them are quite spectacular battles. But we can imagine the devas and the asuras fighting. So it's quite a different level of fighting altogether. So Parashara Bhatta, the great Sri Vaishnav commentator, see how much they're absorbed in Shastra and love of God, that they can, they're inspired from within the heart to understand the meanings of these names in so many ways. So he states that there was one. There's one description of the fight between the devas and the asuras, in which it was Vishnu's bow who made all the difference. He appeared on the scene, as Srila Prabhupada often used that 1960s, 1970s hippies phrase, and finished off the asuras. Now, Shankaracharya gives the idea that the great bow in his hand represents his being the controller and the supporter of the indriyas, the senses. So that would be similar to the name Hrishikesha. And this is supported, another acharya is supported by quoting from Vishnu Purana, where he says that his Dhanva, of course, we know the name Dhanush, but this is another. Dhanush also means bow. And there's a verse from the Vishnu Purana which corroborates this, that his bow symbolizes, specifically the word uses Dhanush here, symbolizes the eyes and the other senses. Okay, then, there's another important meaning. In the Upanishads, there are various analogies given in the Upanishads. One of them, maybe the most famous, is that of the soul and the body is like the passenger on the chariot, intelligence is the driver, and the horses are the senses, and so on. And there are others, two birds in a tree, one is tasting the fruit and another is just observing. So there is another that using the bow called Omkar, one should aim at the ultimate truth. So he is that person, he is that ultimate truth, which is to be attained by aiming with the bow of Omkar. Yeah, then the next name, Khanda Parashu, and I already gave the clue of that. Baladev Vidyabhushan says that he carries a sharp axe that he used to kill the impious Kshatriyas. So Khanda means broken. We wouldn't expect the Lord to have a broken axe, because you think his weapons are transcendental. They don't break. Well, Shankara, I believe it is Shankara, he gives one interpretation that this name actually means Akhanda Parashu. Because the verse says, you can take it either way, Sudhanva Khanda. So you can either take it as broken or not broken. But, surprisingly, maybe, there is a verse in Mahabharata in which Krishna himself says, he's describing a fight between himself and Shiva. There have been quite a few. It's not only over Banasura. If we see in Shastra, there have been quite a few fights between Krishna and Shiva. And the term Khanda Parashu comes right in this verse. The translation is, it's actually two Anustup verses. No? It's given as one verse. Then for this destruction of Rudra, Nara took a reed Reed, do you know what that is? Long grass. And by the recitation of mantras gave power to it. At once it became an immense axe. It was thrown on Rudra with great force, but then it broke. Because of the breaking of the axe, from that time I came to be known as Kanda Parashu, the Lord with the broken axe. Well, you might think his weapons don't break, but in this case he himself said it did. And that goes to the glory of Lord Shiva, that only Shiva would break the weapon. To a great weapon, if it breaks, that means if the opponent can break it, that means that the opponent is very powerful. So it may be, in Krishna's Leela, anything, all kinds of things can happen. That's the meaning of Leela. Anything can happen. It may appear to be human-like. Kritavan kila karmani saharamena keshava atimartyena bhagavan gurha kapata manushaha. Krishna and Balaram, they perform various pastimes which are superhuman. They are superhuman. They're beyond death. They're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But they appeared to be like human beings. And in that way, they were deceptive, could be said. Deceptive. Not in a bad way, but deceptive nevertheless. So, Parashu, this, definitely the name goes with Parashara. His very name is defined by his acts. He has other names, I suppose, before he started chopping up all the Kshatriyas, that he was known by another name, Bhargava. He's sometimes referred to as Bhargava. Yeah. So Shankara gives that interpretation also as Parashuram. The unbreakable axe means the invincible axe. And Kanda, that can also be taken to mean breaking the necks, breaking off the heads. I've heard that Bhaktivedya Purnaswami has... Well, I heard him describe. You've seen the Gaurya Vaishnava Sannyas Danda. And it's stick and he has a little bent thing at the top. And he says that's the axe for breaking wrong theories. Khandan. Khandan Karna. Symbolizes that. The next name, 574, is Daruna. Do you have that in Telugu? Do you say that? Darun? No. You don't have that word. You hear it. Hindi, you don't hear it either. I don't think so. In Bengali, it's quite a common word. Now, I know it's not in Hindi. You may say that, yeah. I know it's not in Hindi because Basu Ghosh, he was reading Shastra in Sanskrit once and he asked me, do I know what Darun means? So it's used quite often in Bengali, at least in the Bengali I know. So it means terrible. It can mean intense also, but the general meaning is something terrible. Now, this word comes often in Srimad Bhagavatam, mostly to describe demons, and also to describe, just like the situation when Yudhishthira, he saw Kali Yuga is coming, he saw so many terrible omens and inauspicious happenings. So it was used. So it seems to be something inauspicious. But everything is there complete in the Supreme Lord. just like his Sudandva, very nice bow, but it's for killing. That bow is it's not just some decoration. You can go to museums. Just in Jaipur, there's a museum of so many weapons and armor. It's a weapons museum, out of date weapons. It's meant for something horrible, for killing. Although it depends on which side you're on. If you're on Rama's side, then killing Ravana seems very good. And if you're on Ravana's side, it might not seem very good. And you also get killed for thinking like that. But Sita was thinking, Sita told, see, Ram's going to come and kill you. And she was very happy to get the news. This Draupadi, she kept her hair loose for how long? 13 years. Which is inauspicious, and said, I'm going to wash my hair in the blood of Dushasana and then I'll tie it up. So Bhima, you have to bring me Dushasana's blood, then I'll tie my hair. So she was, Bhima's name also, it means the same thing, terrible, Bhima, Bhishma. So she's as terrible as he is. So it's allowed, it's to kill the demons, one maybe have to be more horrible than they are. But when we describe the Supreme Lord as Daruna, that from our perspective, that's very nice. Parashur, that's also something. If someone comes, some madman comes running here with an axe, chopping everyone, it'd be something very frightful, wouldn't it? Something very horrible. Sometimes in the West you hear about, not so much nowadays, but chainsaw killers. People come with a chainsaw and just run around in the streets cutting people's heads. And it's very efficient. You can cut a whole big tree, just finished. So it's something very horrible. But it's the name of the Supreme Lord, who is beautiful, sweet, all auspicious and terrible also, because all feelings, all emotions, all possibilities are within him. Akhila Rasamurti, he's the form of all possible feelings and rasas, everything. So he's Shankaracharya says that he is harsh and merciless toward those who follow the evil path. Merciless. Well, wait a minute. He's supposed to be the most merciful. Right? That's what they say. Allah, they say, the most merciful. Yeah, he's merciful, but there is some condition. You have to surrender to him. Even if Ravana had surrendered to him, he would have forgiven him. But he wouldn't. He was advised again and again and again. Just give Sita back. To live peacefully in your sinful life. Just give Sita back. Who advised him? Maricha advised him. And then Ravana said no. So Maricha said, well, better be killed by Ram than by Ravana. If you don't do what I say, I'll kill you. So he said, okay, I'll do what you say. Run, then Ram will kill me. Better be killed by him, then I get liberation. I get killed by you. I go to hell with you. So then, so many. Then, of course, Hanuman, when he came to Lanka, first of all, and found Sita. And then... Wait. You broke my train of thought here. I'm trying to get it in the right order. Then Mandodari, you might say she's motivated because she'd be relegated to number two queen. But she get her father, Malyavan, advised, and then of course Vibhishana, who got kicked out of the kingdom for doing so. Even Kumbhakarna, Just let me sleep peacefully. And on and on and on. But then he, see, this is the first thing, he was completely overcome by calm, so he couldn't think clearly, and then by pride also, that he couldn't, I can't give her back, no, I'll be below my dignity. So everyone will get killed, including me, but I can't give up my false pride. Foolishness, great foolishness. Anyway, the people who have this, Matira nakrishne paratasvatova mitobi padyeja grihavratana madanta gobhir vishatam tamisram punah punas charvita charvananam. Those who have made a vow never to be Krishna conscious under any circumstances, so they'll go on enjoying their senses and go to hell. So for people who are obdurate, stubborn is a more common word for that, and who won't surrender, then, well, they get his mercy, but in another way. So he appears to be merciless. Actually, he's merciful. But then, just like he can, he's the greatest of merciful persons, someone who's extremely sinful, he'll immediately forgive them. But if someone continues to be offensive, then in the same way that he can be extraordinarily merciful, he can be extraordinarily merciless. And he will fight, he will fight, and he will kill them. Rama, when he went, he sent all the monkeys out. They went, it was great effort to even find Sita and then get over the ocean and fight. He got his aim. Just like his bow, he only needs one bow. Sorry, one arrow to kill an enemy. And his arrows never miss the target. So he's fixed on his target. And Ravana is not, you give Sita, or you're not going to get away with this. So in this sense, appears to be merciless. But then when Ravana is killed, then he says, okay, now do the ceremonies for the death. When Kamsa was killed, Krishna also organized the death ceremony. His enmity continues up to death. Then after that, whatever's in the past is gone. Now he's dead, so there's no need to, not an enemy anymore. So that is the Supreme Lord. He doesn't hate anyone. Name dvesha, he says, I don't hate anyone. Asti na priyaha, I don't love anyone. Well, out of the two, the not hating is more prominent. And he punishes them for their good and for the good of the universe. For the good of others also, because someone who's nasty, they do so much harm to others. So in some cases, it's better just to remove them. It's just there are so many instances. Just one popped in my mind just now. A few years ago, at Los Angeles International Airport, someone in the check-in area pulled out a gun and started indiscriminately shooting people and killed about a dozen people before a security guard shot him dead. So he shot him dead, but if he hadn't shot him dead, then he would have killed so many others. So in the same way, the Supreme Lord, he may kill someone to stop them performing atrocities more and more. Because if they go on, they'll go on performing more and more atrocities. And furthermore, he gives them liberation or even more. He frees them from all sins and may even give them love of God. But it's not that he just goes around killing everyone all over the place. It's only for big, big demons. It's just like if someone goes to the doctor and they have some minor injury, and it's not that they, okay, now we're going to do a brain surgery or something. Of course, they may do, just because in the modern age, because they just want to get some money. But it's surgery or cutting. Amputation is a, when there's no other recourse, then only amputation. Otherwise, you try to save the limb. But if there's no other way, there's no other recourse, then only you do that. So Krishna, in the same way, he only kills if necessary. But then when he does, he is Daruna. He's not in two minds about it, like Arjuna was before the battle. Oh, fight. No. No. Krishna was very firm and clear. You have to fight. No way. No way you're going to get away with it. Even at the end, Krishna told Arjuna, even if you say you're not going to fight, you will do anyway because of your nature. You just can't avoid it. So stop messing about and get to the point. Just fight. Now, another meaning of Daruna is who splits, who pierces in that sense. There's another name has come before this, Vidirna, which has the same meaning, to split. That means to split into pieces. That can be understood that he splits into pieces the enemies, both internal, the internal enemy, Shararipu, six enemies, Kam, Krodh, Lobh, Moha, Mada, Matsarya, and external. Now that he's terrible and he splits, I have thought of something and put something. These two ideas put together, these two functions considered together, that as fate, which is often seen to be terrible, he splits people up. And Krishna himself sometimes talks about fate. It's a common discussion how everything is going on by destiny. It's a major influence. Of course, there is free will also. After the battle of Kurukshetra, when Yudhishthira was lamenting, so many people were killed on my behalf, Nara told him that it is he only, the Supreme Lord, as fate. And that name has come, Vidhata, one who gives the fruits of action. That name has already come in Vishnu Sahasranama. So it's he only, Nara told Yudhishthira, who brings people together and disperses them. So Krishna himself, by fate you could say, well, he is fate. He was separated from what would be considered biological parents if he had a biological birth. He was separated from them and went to Vrindavan. Krishna said to the gopis at Kurukshetra, they're saying to him, you left us. You didn't come back. We never want to leave Vrindavan, but we heard you're going to Kurukshetra for the solar eclipse. So we've also come just to see you, and we want to take you back to Vrindavan. Why were you away for such a long time? Actually, Krishna, just after he killed Kamsa, and Ugrasena came and said that, okay, now you be the king. You killed Kamsa. You're powerful. You're qualified. You be the king now. And Krishna said, I just killed him because he was causing so much disturbance. I don't want to be the king. I did what I had to do. I'm going back to Vrindavan, and I'm going to be a cowherd boy again. But in the meantime, then his parents said, no, we didn't see you for such long. You stay for some time. Then they sent him off to Avanti for study. Then they came back, and then Jarasandha attacked, and then Krishna had to look after that, and he got entangled. You know, in the meantime, Rukmini sent a letter that you have to come and marry me, and what can you do, you know? And then he married her, and then he was in Dwarka, and this Samantak jewel came up, and he was accused of killing this Prasena so he could take this Samantak jewel. So he went out to find where is the jewel, and he entered a cave, and then he fought with Jambavan, who gave him his daughter, and then he had to marry her also, and then the Samantak jewel, the same. Then the Satyabhama was given to him. He got entangled in marrying so many queens, and as if by fate, his life went in a different course altogether. Otherwise, the gopis were thinking, yeah, every night we're going to dance with Krishna. The boys were thinking, every day we're going to go out in the fields with Krishna. And Mother Yashoda thought, every day I'm going to feed Krishna my breast milk, because from her point of view, Krishna never grew up. He was always a baby, a kumara to her. So what happened? And Krishna explained to the gopis at Vrindavan. He said to her, do you perhaps think that I'm ungrateful and thus you hold me in contempt? After all, it is the Supreme Lord, said Krishna, who is the Supreme Lord. It is the Supreme Lord who brings living beings together and then separates them. Just as the wind brings together masses of clouds, blades of grass, wisps of cotton and particles of dust, only to scatter them all again, so the Creator deals with His created beings in the same way. So it may seem that fate is very whimsical, but there's a purpose also. Bringing people together, splitting them up. Why is that? Well, it's painful. This material world is meant for pain. It's the cruel Daruna, cruel fate. That's a saying, a phrase in English. Cruel fate, cruel destiny. Cruel means nishthur, is one word for cruel. Or krura, just like the name akrura, means not cruel. Okay, Hare Krishna. When cruel fate hits, remember, this is Krishna in another form. Srila Prabhupada was in Calcutta when it was being bombed by the Japanese. When bombs are falling, he thought, this is Krishna. Krishna in another form. Yeah. What's the difference between us understanding Krishna's mercilessness and the Christians and the Muslims saying that you will burn in hell forever? Well, that's the difference. We don't say forever. You have to suffer, but that's for rectification. It serves no purpose whatsoever to burn in hell forever. For several centuries, Christians, headed up by Thomas Aquinas, their greatest philosopher, their seminal philosopher, you could say, he thought that the great pleasure of heaven is looking down in hell and seeing everyone suffer. A very perverse idea. Whereas our idea is that Chocetato Vimokacheta sa Indriyata Maya Sukaya Bharamadvahato Vimurha. We feel very sorry to see people are suffering in their foolishness and therefore try to do something to help them. It's different. Suffering is imposed on sinful people for their punishment and rectification. It's not some perverse pleasure that you get from seeing them roast in hell forever. What's the point? What, if God is good, what good does that do? Some punishment is required. Just like generally, if you see a parent chastising the child, you don't think, oh, they're being very cruel. You know, the parent knows what they're doing. The child's misbehaved and it has to be punished so that he can grow up to be a good person. Right? When you see a parent chastising a child, you don't think the parent's being cruel or nasty. They're doing what they have to do as a parent. You have to do that. So when Krishna punishes, when we say merciless, that's it appears like that. Actually, he's all mercy. Merciless means he doesn't have any false mercy. The false mercy of letting people get away with wrong things so that they continue to do wrong things. His apparent mercilessness is another manifestation of his mercy. He takes the trouble to chastise others for their own benefit. Hare Krishna. You have a question also? Yeah. Oh, you said in Marathi it's there. I would imagine it's there in any Indian language because it's in Sanskrit. And theoretically, any word in Sanskrit, any noun or verb or adjective, I mean, some words might not be there, like tat might not be there. Although sometimes, otherwise practically any word can be integrated. It's just a matter of, is it in common usage, you could say. So it's not in Hindi. That in other words, if you say it in general use, people wouldn't understand it. So you could say it's not in usage at the present time. Although theoretically you could say in Hindi also, Darun Vyakti, something like that, but then people wouldn't understand it. But it's passable as Hindi. Sometimes in Bengali it's used as a comment, just like yeah, great or something really just something extreme. Oh. That's actually one meaning of the word also, very great, not in an intense. Darun bepa, it's some big thing is going on. Got the darun hiccups, is it? Yeah. Yeah. Come on. Go back to the Gurukul. Tell them. They should know that. We have the Ramayana in Telugu. They should read it. No, it's possible nowadays in people in India, they don't know. They don't know anything. All they know is how to get on their smartphone, and that's all. watch some pornography. That's the limit of their culture. When you've read through the whole seven khandhas of Ramayana, you can tell us who's, what is that? Sita is the husband of who? You can tell us who, he's, is that said in Tamil, that saying also?
Yeah.
In other words, you're just completely stupid and didn't understand it. Anything whatsoever. Who is Sita the husband of?
In Marathi it is very specific. Ramachi Sita Kol. Who is Sita to Rama? It's asked like that. Reading Rama.
Now there's some new modern edition of the Ramayana in which Sita is some fighting, she becomes the prime minister of Mithila, and she's fighting and killing all the demons. Some modern person has given their own interpretation. One of the best-selling, it's a series of books, best-selling in India. All idiots. Okay, Hare Krishna. Jai Sudhanva, Jai Khanda Parusha, Jai Daruna.